from Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
I'm Sabrina Merrill, and this is War News Radio. As Indigenous activists and environmentalists ramp up actions at Dakota Access Pipeline construction sites, solidarity marches have sprung up across U.S. cities. War News Radio accompanied other Swarthmore students to a hashtag NoDAPL march in Philadelphia, and video of the protests will be released soon. This week, reporter Gabriel Contreras offers insight into the timeline of these protests, interviews two students from Swarthmore's environmental action group, Mountain Justice.
This past Saturday, protesters marched the streets of Philadelphia against the Dakota Access Pipeline. The pipeline is Energy Transfer Partners' $3.7 million project, which will transport crude oil from the Bakken region of North Dakota to Illinois. The pipeline is a major source of controversy for two reasons. One, it stretches across sacred Sioux Native American lands and gravesites, and two, it crosses both the Missouri and Mississippi rivers, sources of drinking water and commerce for 18 million Americans. Leaders of the march proclaimed that the pipeline violates the sovereignty of the Sioux Nation and land treaties which secure the tribe's sacred lands. Historically, more than 500 land treaties have been made between the government and Indian tribes. All were broken, nullified, or amended. Furthermore, the leaders argued that the pipeline violates the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. This violence is also physical, as one leader, Charlie Underbaggage, explained. He recited the specific protests where protesters marched from their nearby encampment onto the private construction lands in North Dakota. Security personnel responded by releasing dogs and pepper spray on the protesters. Reminiscent of other oil companies, Energy Transfer Partners has put profits before the safety of the public. In broader terms, this pipeline has been highlighted as an example of environmental racism. It begs the question, would such a project have been approved in wealthier or whiter communities? The legal definition of environmental racism is the intentional or unintentional targeting of minority communities or the exclusion of minority groups from public and private boards, commissions, and regulatory bodies. It is the racial discrimination in the enactment or enforcement of any policy, practice, or regulation that negatively affects the environment of low-income and/or racially homogeneous communities at a disparate rate than affluent communities. Abby Saul and Stephen O'Hanlon, core members of Swarthmore's environmental activist group, Mountain Justice, agree with the use of the term environmental racism.
The fossil industry builds pipelines, builds refineries, extracts and burns these fossil fuels in places where they think there's the least resistance. And this doesn't tend to happen as much in like wealthier communities, whiter communities. It tends to happen in communities that have a lesser political voice because of how our society is structured.
I think it's, I 100% agree. I think it is completely valid to call it what it is and call it an act of environmental racism, not only with the destruction of sacred burial grounds, but also with the complete disregard for Indigenous sovereignty and Indigenous rights, as well as just in general, as Stevens touched upon, these actions by the fossil fuel industry are threatening people's right to water and are threatening people's very existence. And it is, I think, a very important part of the story which particular communities are being most directly affected by this. What areas the industry believes that they can build on, because they don't think that they'll face resistance. They don't think that people have the resources to put up the pressure that they do. They don't think that people all across the country and across the globe are going to stand in solidarity. And they don't think that the mainstream is going to care. So that's why it's also really important that people stand in solidarity to prove them wrong, that we do care. We give a shit about these people and that they can't do this.
Protesters during the Philadelphia March chanted about similar events like the Flint water crisis. Though not the exact same narrative, the people of Flint, Michigan can stand in solidarity with the Sioux tribe. This is also what many people marching in Philadelphia felt, solidarity. At the march, protesters made chants of, "This is what democracy looks like." In a unified voice, the chant showed how people can come together to prevent injustice for their fellow American citizens. Importantly, unified does not mean taking over the voices of the Sioux tribe, but rather lifting up those voices.
Standing in solidarity means that you need to listen to those that you are standing in solidarity with. And standing in solidarity does not mean that you are going there to lift up your own voice. You are doing what you can with the resources and the capacity that you have to lift up the voices of those that you are standing in solidarity with.
Yeah, I think it also, a big part of solidarity for me is recognizing a shared stake in this issue. Some people are more impacted than others, but this is, the Dakota Access Pipeline is just one instance of like what the fossil fuel industry is doing on like a daily basis of putting profit over people.
With a power in numbers, Native American tribes and environmentalists from the United States and beyond have come together to protest the pipeline. This Philadelphia protest is simply one of dozens which have taken place across the United States in cities like Washington, D.C., Seattle, and Phoenix. Showing that these voices are being heard, a recent success occurred on September 9, 2016. The construction of the pipeline has been halted by an order handed down by the Department of Justice. In a joint statement with the Department of the Army, the department said, quote, "The Army will not authorize constructing the Dakota Access Pipeline on core land bordering or under Lake Ohe until it can determine whether it will need to reconsider any of its previous decisions regarding the Lake Ohe site under the National Environmental Policy Act or other federal laws. Therefore, construction of the pipeline on Army Corps land bordering or under Lake Ohe will not go forward at this time." However, it is essential to remember that this is only a temporary action until the Army reaches a decision on the matter.
It is temporary, but I think some people are being very misleading in the way they're framing it, and we cannot let people forget the fact that this fight is still happening and it's far from over. This is a really important step in the right direction, but it's possibly more important now than ever that we keep up the pressure. We know, like, this temporary halt has proven to us that we can win a victory, and so we have to keep up the pressure to make sure that that happens, and we have to follow through and support those on the ground.
Our show was produced this week by Anna Weber, Leo Elliott, and Gabriel Contreras. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archive shows, learn more about our program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's warnewsradio.org. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up between shows and let us know what you think. Thanks for listening. For War News Radio, I'm Sabrina Merrill.